Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby. Mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa. Take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to ChumbaCasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Ch-ch-chumba. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
The Gone Cold podcast may contain violent or graphic subject matter. Listener discretion is advised.
In 1985... Houston police reported that at any given time, 130 to 140 active missing persons cases were on the books. The department received about 5,000 missing persons reports a year involving children under the age of 17. Houston Police Sergeant Steve Gregg said, with about 95% of those solved. Several factors determine whether police take an immediate or serious interest in the disappearances, Sergeant Gregg reported. When the child is 9 or younger, he said, the department generally responds immediately. Kids above that age get, quote, next working day treatment. Other factors slow down police urgency too, such as if an older juvenile has a history of running away. A child who's never disappeared before, Sergeant Gregg said, would get priority. In 1985, almost 20,000 juveniles were reported missing in the state of Texas, and like in the case of Houston, 95% of those were solved, most often the result of running away from home or family abduction. Nationwide, experts that year estimated that only around 200 children went missing due to a stranger abduction. Though a child disappearing at the hands of a predator was, and is, among parents' greatest fears. Beyond the extremely low likelihood of such an abduction, high-profile cases such as the disappearance and murder of Adam Walsh in Florida fed mothers and fathers' paranoia all over the United States and the world. Police in Houston and the Galveston Bay areas commented that children kidnapped by strangers was a rare thing, but they treated every case with that possibility in mind, though they went on to jokingly speak of kids avoiding parents because of things like report cards in the very next breath. Whatever the reason a child disappears, even if the child ran away, the likelihood of that child being a victim of violence, usually sexual violence, increases exponentially. There is little doubt that the 1985 disappearances of siblings Michael and Pamela Mayfield were the result of foul play, and the events and circumstances surrounding their cases only confused the investigation further. The made-for-television film, Adam, was based on the true story of the 1981 abduction and murder of 6-year-old Adam Walsh. Though Adam's head was found weeks after he disappeared, in a drainage ditch, the rest of the body was never found. Otis Toole later confessed to Adam's murder, and recanted, and confessed again. Although many don't believe the confession to this day, the case was officially closed in 2008. The Hollywood, Florida Police Department, along with Adam's father, John Walsh, confident that Toole was responsible. The television movie, Adam, originally aired on October 10, 1983 on NBC and received an audience of about 38 million viewers. The high viewership was significant, as following the broadcast, a series of photographs and descriptions of missing children were shown, alongside a telephone number for viewers to call should they have any information about them. And it worked. Following the original broadcast, 13 out of the 55 children featured were found as the result of tips called into the hotline. Among those children, interestingly, was future hip-hop artist and star Busy Bone of Cleveland, Ohio's Bone Thugs and Harmony. In April of the next year, 1984, the movie Adam was rebroadcast. Missing kids' photos and descriptions were, again, featured at the end of the program, and this time 19 of the 51 featured children were found. After only 2 days of the film's third broadcast in April of 1985, the hotline had received over 3,500 tips. Though a final number is elusive, 5 of the 54 children featured on that rebroadcast were found in those 2 following days, including 9-year-old Teresa McDonald of Fresno, California, who'd been missing nearly 2 years. She'd been abducted by her mother and was found in Denton, Texas. A sequel to Adam aired on September 29, 1986, titled Adam, His Song Continues. The second film concentrated mostly on the Walshes' advocacy concerning missing children legislation and their formation of groups to help combat the issue. Much of the movie was filmed in Houston, Texas, the home of 2 missing children who'd been featured at the end of the third broadcast of Adam, brother and sister Michael and Pamela Mayfield. On Thursday, January 10th, 1985, 6-year-old Michael and his sister, 5-year-old Pamela, were last seen as they walked toward their home from Betsy Ross Elementary School. The school is in Northeast Houston, on the 2900 block of Bay Street at the East Tex Freeway. At an apartment complex near where Pamela and Michael lived with their family, eyewitnesses saw the young siblings playing together and witnessed them entering a green vehicle with an unidentified man. It was the last time they were ever seen again. Virtually no other information about what happened to them exists. Little has been publicized about the siblings themselves at all. Michael Ray Mayfield was born on June 6, 1979, in Harris County, Texas. At the time of his disappearance, it is reported that Michael had a speech impediment, a stutter. He had a burn scar on his right wrist. Michael stood 3 feet tall and weighed 75 pounds. His hair was black and his eyes were brown. He was attending kindergarten at Betsy Ross Elementary School for the second time. It was suggested that he'd started the first time too young. Pamela, who weighed 50 pounds and stood 2 feet 9 inches tall, also attended kindergarten there. She was also born in Harris County, her hair black and her eyes brown. Pamela's ears were pierced. She and Michael's parents, Cynthia and Michael Gant, were separated but not divorced, and the children most often resided with their maternal grandmother in Northeast Houston on Dechome Street, about a mile from Betsy Ross Elementary. Michael and Pamela were given their mother's maiden name, since she and their father weren't married at the time of their births. Lily Mayfield, their grandmother, primarily raised the children, though they did see their parents. Pamela and Michael visited their mother Cynthia and her boyfriend, Bernard March, at their home, as well as their father Michael and his girlfriend, Sharonda Martin, on a semi-regular basis. After their disappearance, investigators began to look at family members for involvement. At first, Houston police officer Gary Montgomery said that they believe a relative or family friend to be involved, since the children were seen willfully entering a vehicle and not forced. Officer Montgomery also commented that both Michael and Pamela were well cared for, with both their mother and father's side of the family providing them with plenty of attention. There were no signs of abuse at all, he said. After checking out the backgrounds of relevant members of both sides of Pamela and Michael's family, Officer Montgomery said that nothing at all came up. No motives or prior criminal records were found that indicated anyone was capable of abducting and hurting the children. After speaking with the families himself, Officer Montgomery remarked that the children knew not to go with a stranger, which only strengthened his theory that Michael and Pamela went with someone they trusted. But after his time with an investigation into the family, police all but eliminated their involvement. The Houston police were treating it as a non-family abduction, though they did believe that the perpetrator was introduced to the children through a relative, someone who had previous contact with 6-year-old Michael and 5-year-old Pamela, whether prolonged or brief. Officer Montgomery said he didn't think the abduction was a sex crime, though he did not expound upon how he'd drawn such a conclusion. The department had several leads, Officer Montgomery told the press, but they were all coming up as dead ends. Michael and Pamela's case information was entered into the FBI's National Crime Computer. Lily Mayfield, the children's grandmother, who primarily cared for them, suffered a heart attack within days of their disappearance. Pamela and Michael's disappearance didn't go unnoticed in the press, though the fact that there were no recent photographs of the children hindered efforts to make their faces readily recognizable to the public. In 1985, after all, cameras weren't extensions of our bodies like they are today, and taking photographs required much more effort and at least some forethought. Their cases, however, even with the lack of information, were considered by some to be Houston's most publicized ongoing case of child abduction in 1985. Their descriptions and images were featured in the closing of the made-for-television movie Adam in April of that year, and the most recent photos of each were displayed on national media. The photographs of a 4-year-old Michael and 3-year-old Pamela were quite old. Still, they were featured on milk cartons, a program that had begun nationwide just months before. In late 1984, the National Child Safety Council enacted the Missing Children Milk Carton Program, which placed photos and descriptions of missing kids on the back side of milk cartons. Within a few months of the campaign beginning, almost half the United States dairies were participating in the program, which ran through the mid-90s. These strategies drummed up leads in the cases of Michael and Pamela Mayfield. Hundreds of tips and sightings came in from all over the country, though none were deemed valid. None, that is, except for one.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At chumbacasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions 18+.
After being featured on national media, a television movie, and a milk carton campaign, leads as to the whereabouts or fate of 6-year-old Michael Mayfield and 5-year-old Pamela Mayfield began pouring in. Houston police investigators reported to have followed up on each of the hundreds of tips, but only one was considered worthy of deep scrutiny, they said. On May 12, 1985, after Pamela and Michael had been missing 4 months, a dispatcher for the Houston Police Department received a call. The dispatcher described the man's voice as sounding like, quote, an elderly black man. The caller told the police dispatcher that the children in the, quote, so-called kidnapping were alive and well, living with their paternal grandmother in Los Angeles, California. When asked how the caller knew this information, the dispatcher said, he replied simply, "I know," and hung up. The caller never gave a name. The call was a welcome relief to the Houston police, It seemed like the most viable call they'd gotten, since both the children's mother and father's sides of the family had relatives in the Los Angeles area. The department enlisted the help of the FBI, who wasted little time checking out the lead, but they determined that all the children's relatives there, on both the Gant and Mayfield sides, had no knowledge or information as to Michael and Pamela's whereabouts. Though the tip seemed to be a dead end, Houston Juvenile Services officers were keeping it on the back burner in case something ever came of it. Nothing ever has. In November of 1985, after the Mayfield children were missing for over 10 months, it was reported that a teacher of Michael and Pamela came forward with something she'd just discovered. As she reviewed negatives of a class play Pamela had performed in, she discovered that photos of both the Mayfield children were among them. The press reported that the photographs would replace the ones that the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children had been circulating for 10 months since they were more recent. Those photos, however, are nowhere to be found, and it's unclear if they were ever circulated at all. Only one group ever came forward to offer a reward for information leading to Pamela and Michael. The Top Ladies of Distinction Incorporated, a Houston-based humanitarian organization focused on social issues and teen mentoring, offered a $500 reward. The children's grandmother, Lily Mayfield, said in February of 1986 that it was hard waking up in the morning and not seeing them. The case took a bizarre turn when harassment charges were brought up against a Houston man. While the investigation into the disappearances of the Mayfield children was in the throes, however unsuccessfully, a 28-year-old man named Joseph Moses Cochran was mucking up the waters. Houston's Channel 13 television reporter, Melanie Lawson, who was perhaps Pamela and Michael's greatest media advocate, had been reporting on the children's disappearance since the beginning. Unbeknownst to Melanie, at least at first, she had a stalker, Joseph Moses Cochran, who would exploit the Mayfield children's case to get close to her. Not long after the disappearance, Cochran phoned Melanie Lawson, calling himself Stacy, telling her he was holding Michael and Pamela, and that he and several others had taken them. His attempt to get her to meet him. When she did meet him, she was wearing a wire, and police were standing by. They swarmed in, and when it was determined he didn't have the children, he was charged with making a false report, a misdemeanor. When he was released, Cochran continued his attempts to meet Melanie. He tried following her home, visited her place of employment several times, Channel 13, blocked the entrance of the TV station with his car, and repeatedly called Melanie Lawson. When the calls were traced to a payphone near the man's home, he was arrested for a combination of all his efforts to draw Melanie Lawson to him. In April of 1986, Joseph Moses Cochran was sentenced to prison, but he didn't stop there. He began writing Melanie letters, signing them as Stacy and threatening her life for sending Moses to a penitentiary. Luckily, just before he was set to be released on parole in 1988, police obtained the man's fingerprint from a particularly obscene and threatening letter, and he was sentenced to more time. Cynthia, Pamela and Michael's mother, told a Houston reporter in 2016 that she always felt hurt when children went missing. Both Pamela and Michael are forever in her mind as young children. Cynthia couldn't help but feel responsibility. The kids wanted to walk home, and she gave in, a fact that continues to haunt her. She told KHOU News, "I cry at night sometimes thinking about them." If you have any information on the disappearances of Pamela and Michael Mayfield, please contact the Houston Police at 713-222-3131. You can support Gone Cold at patreon.com/GoneColdPodcast. Donors at all levels there get the show ad-free. Also, for just $2.50 a month, You'll have access to episodes featuring stories of mostly solved Texas crimes and the bad actors who perpetrated them. Patreon exclusives include The Woman in the Wooden Box and The Thrill Killers, among many others. Thanks to everyone who supports us there. We appreciate y'all's support beyond words. Ebony Magazine, The Victoria Advocate, The Houston Chronicle, KHOU Houston, the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children, and court documents were used as sources for this episode. Thanks for listening, y'all.
Hi, I'm Christine, and I'd like to introduce you to the True Crime Files podcast, a bi-weekly podcast that focuses on mysterious disappearances and unsolved murders. Every 2 weeks, we'll be releasing an episode that'll help you get to know a case really well without having to invest a lot of your time. Derived from the articles up on the True Crime Files website, you'll find that our show covers a diversity of victims and perspectives. You'll probably also notice that our episodes are narrated by Scott Fuller from the Frozen Truth and Status Pending podcasts. Be sure to subscribe to the True Crime Files today so that you never miss an episode. Thanks so much for listening, being a part of our true crime community, and helping to shine a light on cases that might otherwise be overlooked or underreported.